from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
I'm making faces at them now. We're doing face yoga.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Okay, it is May 25. We officially start the show. May 25, 2017, Richard Massey and Meridian Grace. We would call them the Masseys, but they're the Massey Graces. It could be the Graceful Masseys. I like that. That works.
I like that too.
What do you think? That works, huh? The Graceful Masseys. Hey, maybe you have something here, girls and boys. You could do the Graceful Masseys YouTube channel.
Oh, there you go.
What do you think?
Yeah. Let's patent it soon.
Yeah, I would trademark that sucker right away, man. Somebody's going to grab it. GracefulMasseys.com is probably available for $9.95 through GoDaddy, but you know. Dr. Richard Massey is an MD. He is a medical doctor. He's a medical doctor, and he is in Austin, Texas. He's one of the few medical doctors that wear tie-dye T-shirts to work like he does today, so that's good. The other ones, they wear this little stethoscope thing, and it's really strange. Meridian Grace, she is, how would you describe, here, Dr. Massey, you get to describe Meridian Grace. You get to introduce her like it was your talk show. How would you introduce her to her millions of fans that listen to your show? What would you say? I'm putting them right on the spot here, right on the spot here.
Yeah, the queen of learning.
The queen of learning, okay. That's it? That's all you do?
Well, the rest of it we won't say on the radio show, but
I see. Yeah. I understand that one. Yeah. Yeah, Meridian Grace is she's been to every workshop that's ever been workshopped except two, I think, but they send her an invite every couple of weeks. Come on, Meridian, you got to do that one too. And you just got back from another one, didn't you? No, not.
No, but I've been doing a lot of studying online, and oh my goodness.
Wow.
Just
what are you studying?
Actually, these days, a lot about what they call the biome, which includes the microbiome, the virome, the whole arena of eukaryotes and parasites, and just all of the life forms that live inside of the human form.
There you go. Man, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a kind of show like that on Monday with Stephen, and he's turned us on some really interesting probiotics that we can talk about today too. That I think you guys might, I think you're going to want to try these. Okay, these is from humans.
Yeah, that's what I've been using for years. Is human microflora.
What?
Well, probably 3 years.
Well, which one you've been using?
Human microflora.
Oh, yeah.
It's HMF.
This is a different one. There's always something new.
There's many different ones.
There's
in the human microflora family.
Yes.
But I get it. Somebody else is doing human microflora now too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important. We all have individual microflora that works for us. And you know, there's they actually call it an MGB, Patrick.
What is that? Like an MG, like an MGM movies? MGM?
So there's this microbiome gut-brain axis, and it turns out that most of the information our brain gets is from the bugs in our gut.
That's right. I think that's true.
the
inmates are running the asylum, which is, you know, makes sense. The inmates are running the asylum. Everybody out.
There's been 10 times genes and microbacteria and things in that whole microbiome than there are in our human bacteria or our human forms.
How many trillion, Meridian? Is it 100 trillion or something like that? Or weird number or a trillion? I don't know, man.
We got to the last bead on the abacus and there was still more germs.
Yeah. Still more germs.
More and more and more. But 10 times more genes in these microorganisms than in a human gene.
So say that again. I mean, so
in a human cell. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, so there's a cell. We have a cell, right? And then they have a certain amount of genes in each cell meridian, and then each little buggy poo has kabillion.
10 times more genes.
Oh, in the bug. In the bug itself.
In the bug itself than the human cell.
But then how could you do like a bunch of antibiotics and stuff and kill all those genes and still live? I don't understand that.
Yeah. I think we have a failed strategy. It's time for Houston. We have a problem.
Houston, okay, hold on a second, because I think...
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Yeah. Houston, we have a problem.
That's right. We've got a problem. That is a problem, I guess. Maybe that's why these things are not good.
Yeah. All these little bugs that are saying smart things to our brains so that we know how to function in this world, and we're dropping nukes on them.
I see. Carpet bombing them. Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you.
We just think we're so much smarter than our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how that happened. I wonder.
I mean, take our
clothes
from the body.
I wonder how that happened. I mean, you know.
Yes. How did that happen?
How did that happen? Indeed. Yeah. How did it happen? Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. It's way above my pay grade, I tell you that. Okay. Here's how you do this thing. If you got a story to tell on the show and you want to ask a question of the Masseys or the graceful Mass, or it is 888-663-6386. If you like to do the phone, or nobody does the phone anymore because it's way too complicated. Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. We have some interesting emails already stacking up in the inbox for you kids, two kids. Yep. And Doodle gets a question every now and then. And they never ask me because, well, they know better. they just know better. Doc, tell me about this fellow you were telling me yesterday on the phone.
Okay.
This doctor that you want to visit, he sounds pretty, pretty interesting.
Yeah, his name is Wally Taylor.
Wally Taylor.
And he's here in Austin, and might be interesting to have him on the show or go by and visit him and see some of his... new devices. He's got that ultraviolet and red and green color IV device. And he's also got that big thing that holds 700 liters of oxygen, and you sit on an exercise bicycle and switch back and forth from 100% oxygen to 15% oxygen while you exercise.
And what's the idea behind 100% to 15%?
So what it does is it puts the body in a position of stress and relief alternating, and the body dumps tremendous amounts of volatile poisons.
Really?
Out of the system, yeah, and reaches a new level of fitness.
Really?
It's called LIVO2 or LIVO2, L-I-V-E-O-2.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a big collapsed hot air balloon that covers a whole wall. And then you fill it up with an oxygen concentrator, and the person breathes out of that while they work on this exercise bicycle.
Oh, so yeah. Sounds like a politician. But politicians are usually just breathing their own exhaust fumes, you know. So this is good. It's this way you get to breathe oxygen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. That's good. Boy, that sounds pretty interesting. What do you think about that theory, the 100%, 80, 10% thing? You think there's something to that?
It looks like there is. He was telling me some stories yesterday about things that actually happen to real people, which seems to be what science actually is designed to be.
Yeah.
Real things that happen to real people, and someone actually observes it. So there are some patterns there that look like it's really beneficial. Mm-hmm. So at 15% oxygen, it's like training for the Olympics up in the mountains.
Oh, I see. Wow. How much oxygen do we have out here?
21.
21. So they
That's sea level.
They put you a little below.
Yeah, if you're doing 100% oxygen, it's like almost being in a hyperbaric tank in a way.
Right.
So you're getting all this great oxygen. And then you switch to the 15%, and it's like you're suddenly running up in some high mountains somewhere.
Oh.
Pedaling your bicycle. Wondering what happened to the air.
Where's all the air?
Oh, it was hard when I was living in high elevation.
Is it? Where'd you live, Meridian?
Well, I lived up in Taos at one point.
Yeah.
And then I lived at varying heights on Mount Shasta. And Mount Shasta goes up to 13,000 feet.
Yeah.
But I was living at about 7. And then I would do a lot of hiking up to 9. And I couldn't actually hike up to 13 without getting sick.
So where, so they actually train people at low oxygen and their body gets stronger, Doc?
Yes, that's the idea.
Oh, I see, because you don't have much, so your body's got to just step up to the plate and get creative and get stronger kind of thing.
Yeah, and you make extra blood cells when you do that. And so then when you go back down to lower altitudes, it's kind of like blood doping. In a way, it's like you've had an extra unit of blood put into your body to carry oxygen.
A
friend from Peru who lived at Lake Titicaca, which is like 13,000 feet.
You can't say that on the radio.
Titicaca,
Titicaca.
It was so amazing. She's a runner.
Yeah.
And she could just run and run and run and run. She said it's so easy here compared to in Peru. Because, I mean, we have such a low elevation here. And typically she wouldn't run no more than half a mile when she was in Peru. She could run for 10 miles here.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like anything.
So here's one of the other tips I got from Wally yesterday as he was talking about the folks he sees. He has either come up with or learned from others that some of the chronic infections, the things like Lyme and co-infections, one of the things that those germs get involved with is keeping our body temperature low. And so for the listeners out there, if your body temperature is low and you've tried thyroid and it ought to work and it doesn't, then one of the things they've discovered is that doing saunas and forcing the body temperature to be elevated reduces the amount of these infectious agents in the body because they can't tolerate normal temperatures.
Oh, cool. So let's see if I understand. You know, that's interesting because my body temp goes a little low, but my thyroid's fine, right? So doing this sauna should help raise my body temperature naturally?
Yes, and if there's any organisms in there that are working to keep your temperature low because that's best for them.
Oh, I see. So that's another key into the low body temp thing.
Yes. Yeah. It actually is a natural way of doing antibiotics. You can get the germs that aren't sending happy messages to the brain. You can reduce them by making your body temperature go up a little bit higher than normal for a little while in the sauna every day, and then those germs seem to go away and some of the friendlies take their place. Isn't that sweet?
I like it.
I mean, I just wanted to say quickly about that. I run incredibly low, and you know, I don't think of myself as being someone who's carrying a lot of infection, but my equipment told me that I have had a Helicobacter pylori infection.
Well, good for you. Yeah, that's a good one to have.
And before Lyme. And so I treated the Lyme homeopathically, and I just noticed that my energy came up. But every time I go in the sauna, I feel fantastic. And I'm just wondering if that's going to help
Sure. Yeah. That's a great idea, Marty. You know what I also do, if you know, is that you could get some of this, you get a really high dose colloidal silver from Gary, you know, Gary Hanna. He's got he's got the real stuff, you know. And this nano, not nano, but monoatomic particles that he has. Because the nano we think are not good, you know, all this nanotechnology. A lot of information coming out that it's not good. It's clogging up stuff, you know. And most of the colloidals out there are nano and they don't tell you, right? This is monoatomic that he makes. And you guys met Gary. He's cool. And he I got one that's 6,000 parts per million.
Wow.
6,000. You can put a little bit of that in a nebulizer and nebulize them little suckers. Phew. I'll tell you what, I think they're going to be down there killing some stuff. I diluted it. I diluted the 6,000 12 times, got it down to 500 ppms, which is still really high if you go online. I mean, most of them are what, Meridian? 50, 100, 500, you know, max is what you see. And I put it in a spray bottle, and it really did a number and helped Doodle. The fleas we had a few months, about 6 weeks ago, just, you know, exit stage left. They just...
Sprayer?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
And it's just water and silver, you know?
And you sprayed her skin with it.
Just sprayed her and just put it in her fur. So I've been thinking, since it doesn't smell or anything, it's just like water, is that people listening could spray it on their hands and like rub it in their cat, you know, and their, you know what I'm saying? And just get it down in there. Their cats go in and out and they get fleas during the summer. And pretty interesting. Pretty cool. So I've been doing some nebulizing with that, and it's pretty trippy, you know. It's I'm not sure what's going on, Meridian, but there's something going on, you know. It's pretty interesting, yeah. He's got copper, he's got gold, he's got silver, and selenium too, and also magnesium.
Selenium?
Yeah, in monoatomic form, so you can nebulize it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says you can take it internally, but you lose a lot of it. Not a lot of it, but it's better to nebulize if you can.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been using nebulized silver with a little hydrogen peroxide people.
That's what he recommends too. What does the hydrogen peroxide do, Meridian? That's interesting you say that, because he always says do that as well, that it leverages it. It makes it stronger.
Yeah. Rich could probably tell you more about the specifics of hydrogen peroxide, but basically, you know, it's another one of those things that selectively is, I hate using the term killing, because our bodies so desperately need a balance of our, you know, in our ecological system, that sometimes when we have an overgrowth to make things easier for us while we're working on changing our ecosystem internally, we need to help ourselves with a little support and getting rid of some of the things that are creating a lot of discomfort. We would use that hydrogen peroxide for, also for oxygenating though. And I think that's another big aspect of the positive side of hydrogen peroxide. If our bodies are too oxygen deficient, anaerobic, then using hydrogen peroxide will help to bring up the oxygen levels. Like, for instance, I've been recently studying about how so many people think that they need to eat alkaline food in order to be alkaline, and misunderstood what Warburg was talking about for cancer and helping ourselves stay healthy and keeping our metabolic states balanced.
Uh-huh.
What happens is when we eat too much carbohydrate and we have a release of insulin, then lactic acid is one of the byproducts, and that creates an acidic environment. And that acidic environment is what can feed cancer cells. It's eating, you know, it's not eating protein or things like that. It's the sugars will create a lactic acid byproduct.
Yeah, that sounds right. So maybe, Meridian, that's part and parcel of all of the more information we keep getting about, you know, the grains are other than the best foods long term and on, you know, every day and all that thing, maybe, because, you know, that's, of course, as you know, that that's part of the whole metabolic syndrome as well, where the arteries are getting clogged up, not from fat or cholesterol, but from actually too many processed carbs.
Yeah, cholesterol too, I think people have a really misunderstanding about it, because it comes in to clean up tissue damage inside the arteries. So it's kind of like a mud or a plaster.
Yeah, a spackle. It's a spackle.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, it's a spackle. That's right. That's what it does for a living, right? yeah, because Doc, I think we've talked about it over the years, and I think it's pretty well understood now that the cholesterol comes in and they see a little irritation, inflammation, possible tear, and because it's its job, it'll patch it up a little bit. And then the calcium comes in a little bit too to even smooth it over more.
Yeah.
And that's what a CT scan picks up, is that calcium.
Is that what it picks up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how strong of a marketing culture that we have, that a group of people can put out complete opposite information.
Yes. And you think?
We put the whole industry around it.
Yeah. Well, it's happening, of course, with terrorism, you know. It's all a lie, the way they say it is, right? It's all a lie, totally, absolutely, 100%. And, you know, it was created by the CIA, ISIS, Al-Qaeda. You know, that's what they do for a living. And they create them to cause havoc so they can go in and change regimes. It's very simple. It's not very complicated. This is what they do. sorry, folks, but this is what they do. And you can do the research if you really dig deeply. And then you create a thing like cancer, right? Or autoimmune, or terrorism. Hegelian dialectic, you create it, and then you've got to come up, oh, we've got the cure. We've got it. Wait a minute. No, wait a minute. We need another 300 or 400 million, and we're going to find the cure for it, you know. Then you come in and, you know, you blow up countries. It's just, it's absurd, you know. Our culture is kind of, we just, we believe a lot of stuff, you know. I don't know how it works like that.
Yeah, well, waking up is rarely a graceful looking process.
well, there you go.
So it seems to me like there's an awakening happening. And we've moved from the operating room to the recovery room, and
I like it. Yeah, we're in recovery.
Yes.
I feel like that some days, boy, I tell you that. But, you know, don't you think, though, can't we liken it to a healing crisis, right, with the body? Isn't it the same thing, right?
I think it is.
Uh-huh.
I think you get on it there.
Yeah, you get to go through a little healing crisis as we awake, and you go, oh,
yes.
My, right. But as you know, as you guys know, and the doctor, what you do in your work with Recall Healing, that it's necessary to bring things up to the surface, right?
Yes.
Right? Whatever. So as more people understand what I just said about terrorism or whatever, right, then maybe they'll say, well, that's interesting. Maybe it isn't like I heard on CNN or whatever, right?
yeah.
I mean, maybe it is fake news. Whoa. and it's like that with emotions, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We see them. They come up and they go, well, that's curious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of fun. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at 1radionetwork.com. It is Richard Massey, Meridian Grace, Patrick, and Doodle. And Doodle's not paying much attention, however. So. And we're going to do a little thing here. And we'll take your calls and your emails and have more fun. Lots to talk about this morning. Stay right there. Previously on Open Phones, a listener named Carol called us and told us about a little dog named Camo.
Camo is a little dog, and she's a very old lady. Hadn't fed her anything but just kibble, and sure enough, the dog's just, you know, going the way of poorly fed dogs, and just about blind. Her tummy drags the floor, and she's got tumors all over her. She just persists in living, though. About 6 months ago, I gave her owner some sulfur. About 3 weeks ago, she finally gave her some of it. And, you know, Camo's about to die. I guess sulfur won't kill her now. Camo, whose belly had been literally almost draining the floor, was she's all slimmed up. And then they said, well, have you noticed Camo's tumors are half the size?
Really?
Ow.
And
on 2 weeks of sulfur? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
This that's is
two,
crazy. 2 weeks.
It's not just a sulfur story. It's a dramatic sulfur story.
Sulfur appears to make pets and people happy. You can try some. Order right now on OneRadioNetwork.com. What we recommend for the doggies and the cats would be to put a little bit in a bowl and then have two different bowls, you know, your regular water bowl and then your bowl with a little sulfur. And if they want it, they're going to take it. I'm not too crazy about the idea of just giving them sulfur, but you could. I mean, if they had something going on, it's not going to hurt them. But maybe they don't need it, like anything. And then usually the pets are much more intuitive than... Why is that? They've got four legs and we got two and they're more intuitive. Anyway, they know what they want. Certainly Doodle does. So I like to put in a separate bowl if she wants a little. But I got a little sulfur story with the homeopathic and the itching that I'll tell you after the break. But anyway, so if you'd like to get some sulfur, we're going to order again later on this afternoon. So if you'd like to get in on this order, it is patrick@oneradionetwork.com. No, I just go to oneradionetwork.com. Three prices, United States, Canada, worldwide. More than 4 pounds, email me. Previously with Daniel Vitalis, we were talking about, pine pollen.
Pollen is essentially the equivalent of what an animal would have as sperm. Pollen is like the male part, the semen, and it fertilizes the ovum of the flower, which becomes eventually a fruit. And so if we were going to draw the equivalence, it would be like that the flower is like the female sex organ and the pollen is like the male sexual ejaculate. Well, pine trees, which sort of just dominate so much of the landscape of North America and so much of the world, pine trees, they're semen. They dust the landscape in pollen. And that pollen, being the sort of male part of the plant, has some correspondences to male physiology in our species and many other animal species. So what I'm saying is pine pollen contains all of these different anabolic or androgenic hormones, plant versions of hormones that we need, like testosterone, like DHEA.
Well, the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees. Good stuff, guys, and for you girls, too. Several choices of pine pollen. Any Sirthrival link, OneRadioNetwork.com. I mentioned this new probiotic that Stephen has. It's amazing. He goes through some of these probiotics, and he thinks they're the very best, and then he'll find some other ones and say, oh, these are better. So he's got a new one, and I've taken it 2 days, and I tell you what, in 2 days, I can feel there's something and see, get my drift of something going on, and they're little sachets, and you take a whole sachet of it in warm water on an empty stomach, and it's called Progurt, P-R-G-U-R-T. There are, let's see, 1 trillion CFU beneficial bacteria restores the microorganisms you were born with. It's human probiotic isolates or probiotic strains identical to those found in healthy human guts from birth. Unlike other probiotics that contain animal and plant strains, HBI consists of lactic acid bacteria, LAB, and bifidal bacteria. High-quality, fast-consisting probiotic sources, and when consumed, adequate amounts have been shown to aid digestion, rebalance gut flora, and do the whole IBS thing and all of that. 1 trillion CFUs, whatever that is, for the microbiome that Meridian was talking about. This is it could be a fun thing to try. Why not? And I think he also has a little fun syrup, which I didn't get, but you can get that, which is a carefully kind of calculated little prebiotic that you could take to help, but there's other prebiotic foods that you can eat as well. I think Jerusalem artichokes are one, and I'll ask the team here, Meridian and Richard, if they know of other prebiotic foods. So it's Progurt, and it's on any Sirthrival, any One World Way link. If you go there, we'll just get the way, and then you can get some of the Progurt.
Broadcasting live, weekday morning, this is listener-supported One Radio Network.
The winds of change out there We've been having windy days the last 3 days. I like to call it the winds of change. Do you like to change?
If you knew that you would die today, you saw the face of God and love, would you change? Would you change? If you knew that love can't break your heart, when you're down so low, you cannot fall, would you change? Would you change? How bad, how good does it need to get? How many losses, how much regret? What chain reaction would cause an effect? Makes you turn around, makes you try to explain, makes you forgive and forget, makes you change.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
I like to change my socks and underwear, but other than that, you know, nah, I don't think so. Oh, God. That's a great song, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, let's see. Let's see here. Oh, I wanted to mention this from, what, Marianne, you have some?
Did you want to talk prebiotics for a minute?
Yeah, yeah. What you know about prebiotics? Talk. Give us a little prebiotic seminar here. And hold on a second. Well, now, before you do that.
Prebiotics, but there are a lot of them. And actually, one of the best ways to get your prebiotics is in greens.
Greens, uh-huh. Okay.
But the classic ones that are really high are, you're right, Jerusalem artichoke and chicory.
Chicory.
Yes.
You mean like the chicory drinks that people make sometimes, those things? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Chicory is a big one. They talk about fructooligosaccharides. But here's another thing that people need to be aware of, and it's called SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, where the good bacteria from the large intestine goes up into the small intestine and wreaks havoc. And the thing that feeds that like crazy is prebiotics. They call them FODMAPs, fructans, oligosaccharides, disaccharides, and M is for monosaccharides, and APs are apiols. And so there's a lot of foods that fall in there, including things like onion and garlic. So, and cauliflower, I personally took those out of my diet and have noticed quite an amazing difference in my gut health.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, my Ayurvedic guy, he says, for me, no onions and garlic. I wonder why he said that.
It could be because of the FODMAP piece. Does he like you to have cauliflower?
He has never mentioned cauliflower.
Yeah, so that's also a very high FODMAP. And those are foods I used to eat almost every day, onions and garlic for sure.
Huh.
And we did a lot of cauliflower instead of potatoes and things.
Huh.
So it's a real interesting piece. Some people do really well with prebiotics and other people have a horrible response to them. And so you want to check your probiotic that you're taking. And if you notice that you get a lot of discomfort, it may not be die-off. You may actually be feeding the imbalance, and you want to check that out.
I'm getting a strange sound with you guys. Do you hear something at all on your end?
Yeah, it's mowing the yard, so we're going to move to another room.
I wasn't hearing. Was that what I was hearing? It was something like, it was like a,
yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, it might be her lawnmower. We've been closing windows to try and deal with that.
Oh, I see. I thought it was an alien invasion, and I was wanted you to put him on the mic.
Well, for the moment, we're going to go ahead and see how this works.
Okay.
Patrick.
All right.
So we've been moving while we've been talking with you.
Oh, I see. Oh, I hadn't had you on camera, so I didn't see you moving. Now I see an empty chair. Uh-huh. Well, that's good.
Well, and probably a bunch of computers. We're going to move all this stuff out of the way and
good job.
Enrich it. And,
yeah, that, yeah, I didn't know what that is. If you'd like to ask Richard Massey and Meridian Grace a question, we'll deal with it. Stephen just sent me because, and I'll give this other little plug for the, for the Progurt. There's 500 to 1,000 strains. They don't give specifics as it's a proprietary and political thing. 1 trillion CFUs per sachet. They do not say exactly. The gut strains, as the FDA would interfere. Oh, I see. They are human strains found in healthy infant gut. Interesting. So they got to be careful with all the stuff they say, because you know the gov, the one we love, is always looking out for us. So we're really glad that your guys are out there doing that. We appreciate it, and also that the NSA is cataloging all of this information as well. You know, for future generations. It's good. We appreciate it. We really do. I mean, don't you think it's good? It's like a seed bank, you know?
Right.
You know,
right.
We got the seed bank, right? They're saving all the seeds. NSA saving all this information. And then, I don't know, I guess they'll maybe sell it to another planet someday. You got, we're kind of crazy, but do you guys want all this? Because, man, we'll sell it to you. What do you got?
Everybody's looking for a good microbiome.
That's right. Everybody's looking for a good microbiome. God, wouldn't it be funny, you all, if the Zacharias Stitchin's model thing is anywhere near correct? You know that one, Gods of the New Millennium. What is it, Dr. Massey? What's the whole conjecture, the theory that Stitchin's, these other people have said? Dr. Marshall was into it too. Bob Marshall, who actually is now with them. What was it that these people came in millions of years ago from another planet, right, and played around with our genes and were kind of an experiment?
Yeah. I listened to Michael Tesarian's version of that a lot.
Yeah.
He puts forth a lot of data that supports that. It's kind of compelling, you know, these quotes from the Popol Vuh, that sacred book from Central America, and all the books that were not allowed in the Bible.
Uh-huh.
And looks at all of those things, and you can certainly make a case for what he's putting forth there, that we are actually genetically modified primates.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Sure. Well, some of it's actually in the regular Bible that I had in the Southern Baptist Church. You know, it talked about these angels that were fallen from heaven.
Yeah.
And then scripture verses like there were giants among men, and they took the women and had children with them, you know. So there was at least a DNA mixing from that standpoint, if from nothing else. But the evidence suggests that there was actually genetic manipulation on a large scale, and that we are genetically modified primates. And
well, kind of makes sense. I mean, just if you think about the whole monkey idea, you know, that we kind of came from them, which I don't think we did. I mean, there's always been a missing link, right? They call it the missing link. There's never been a right. Never. I think that there are humans somehow popped up in another form somewhere along the line. And
Greg Braden, if you listen to his latest series called Missing Links, interesting.
Oh, is that what it's called? Yeah.
On Gaia, he goes into some detail about chromosome number 2, which is where we get all these big characteristics we have nowadays. And the consensus is that could not have occurred by any natural process, that all of a sudden there was this shift in chromosome 2 nobody can explain.
Yeah.
And that's what makes us who we are in a large part. And so
does he say how many millions of years ago he conjectures that was?
Yeah, you know, and I don't remember that part.
Yeah.
But the thing that fascinates me is that we can see for sure in families that people repeat things on anniversaries of big events in families. And my suspicion is that things like World War I and World War II were actually anniversaries of this war that happened between the aliens on the surface of the planet. And they're very muted down versions. If we could go back and look, the evidence looks like that those battles were colossal and there were almost no survivors on the planet.
Maybe there's a point that the species that we are, we knew that we know. You know, animals just kind of know, right?
Yes.
But they don't know that they know. And at that point, I think that's where soul, as we know it, that we know, popped in. That's my conjecture. That's why I think that's when we really popped in. Even though the other souls are souls, we made a leap. Soul made a leap, and they talk about it in the Akankar sacred teachings. There was a time when soul made a leap from going from just knowing, you know, if you think about the idea that we have always been around and we started maybe even as light and sound, right? Our essence turning into gas, right? And then evolving up into minerals and bacteria and, you know, do the whole thing all the way up through maybe apes or something like that?
It looks like light is interested in becoming all kinds of forms for the purpose of something about experience. And nobody has to take any of what I say seriously in order to get well from whatever's troubling them.
That's exactly right. No, that's exactly right. You don't have to buy anything. Don't have to buy anything. Well, it's fun to think about. It's really great stuff to think about. And I think we all have the capabilities to get on that time track since it's all now and to see for sure. So I'm counting on you to do that, Doc, and then write a book. You know, that's your job if you choose to accept it. On the phone, who's this, please? Good morning.
Yes, good morning. This is Alan from Vancouver Island.
Can you guys hear Alan?
Hey, oh, yeah, Alan.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Alan. How's up there in Vancouver, BC?
It is gorgeous this morning. It is, it's about 10 degrees, whatever that is in Fahrenheit, 10 plus. It must be about 15, wow. 32, 45. It's about 48, but it's going to be about 70, I think, today. So
I love the way you guys say a boot.
A boot.
A boot. You guys are a boots. I like it.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I'm enjoying your conversation there. This isn't what I called up about, but if you read Buffalo Bill's autobiography, he talks in there about... one night he was traveling with some Indians, and they were kind of in unfriendly Indian neighborhoods. And they hid in a cave, and it was raining out and whatever. And anyways, a couple of the natives went away, and they were just gone for a little while. And then they came back with this big, huge bone, and it was a huge bone. And They told Buffalo Bill, now I read this a while ago, so don't quote me on this, but basically they told him that this was a bone from the giants who lived on the earth before the flood, and that God had, I don't know, killed them or whatever you want to call it, because of what they were doing with the world or whatever, you know. So,
That's probably a part of the allegory of the biblical things, right, where... the people were doing dumb stuff and ate the apple and that and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's other folks out there. I forget. I don't know. We call the fellow's name that he's been writing and talking about these giants and forever. And he's really kind of credible if you hear him. He's a scientist. Stephen Greer? No, not Stephen Greer. He's the alien guy. Whatever, Alan. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I enjoy this stuff too.
It's fun.
I've seen a few YouTubes. Oh yeah, it's just like a mind. It's like chewing gum, you know.
I think you know what's going to be really interesting. At the end of the day, we're going to find out that Madonna and Kim Kardashian, they had it all on their videos, and we missed it.
I bet you you're right. You know.
You know what I'm saying?
I bet you studied that for years to arrive at that conclusion. Oh my. just a second to also say to Richard Meridian, I enjoy Rupert Spira too. My wife is quite dedicated to listening to everything he says. I enjoy what he says.
Who's that? Quite, Rupert?
Rupert Spira.
I don't know that one. Rupert Spira?
Yes, he's a wonderful non-dualist teacher.
Non-dualist. Well, it's the only way to go.
Yeah, Richard mentioned that in one of the podcasts here. That's why I decided. But I do have questions about coffee enemas.
Oh, if good. Go right for the bomb. That a boy, go right for it.
Don't fool around. Eh?
That's right, go right for it.
Okay, I'm just kind of wondering, the recipe that you guys use for the coffee and the volume and the times.
Sure.
Time inside of you.
Yeah. So just so you know, my favorite coffee is they're from Canada. It's from S.A. Wilson's. And it's a non-roasted coffee. It's kind of golden brown in color. I believe they use 16 different types of coffee that were designed specifically for working with cancer. So I like that coffee, and I take 3 tablespoons of it, and I place it in either a ceramic-type pot, like a Creuset, or a glass, old glass Pyrex pot without any of the junk on the inside. People have some of those with Teflon. We don't want that. And I'll bring it to a boil, and then just kind of the typical recipe is to let it steep for like 15 minutes. You could do that the night before, and in the morning just warm it to the temperature that feels comfortable for you.
Let me ask Meridian. So you bring it to a boil, and then you simmer for 15 minutes? I didn't quite get that. You simmer?
Simmer it for 15
okay.
minutes.
Okay, then you turn it off.
Then you turn it off, that's right.
And cool it down to body temp, so you get it down to like 98 or something?
Yeah, whatever feels good against your wrist, like you would check for a baking bottle.
Okay.
Yeah. You can either do that by adding a little cold water. If you have ice cubes that you've made with good water, you know, whatever you used, good drinking water, you could use an ice cube to cool it down if you want to use it immediately. I like the idea of making it the night before, and then you just warm it to the temperature that you want in the morning or whenever you're going to make your enemas. Typically, I like doing them in the morning because when your liver is clean, which is what we're up to with this process, we're going to be releasing bile and cleansing the liver. You feel so wonderful when your liver's clean. There's more energy. There's more mental clarity. There's just a wonderful sense of well-being when the liver's clean, which is partly why they use it so much with cancer. When people are in pain, oftentimes they can use a coffee enema instead of pain meds even. So basically, I like to do what's called a high enema. Rich doesn't do high enemas. I do high enemas. So I use a silicone setup, and I have many of them here at the office if you need them. They took me a long time to find. They're not that easy to acquire. But I have a silicone bag and silicone tube, which is non-toxic. A lot of the bags are made with Lycra. People have sensitivities to Lycra and different forms of rubber. These are also flexible, and a lot of people use just a hardened tube that they insert only about 6 inches into the anus. And when you do that, you're getting the part of the body where you have nerve endings, and that area can get tender, and a hard tube can be uncomfortable for that purpose. So when you use a long tube, even though it sounds weird, I get mine in about 36 inches. And The only part that I feel is the first 6 inches. As it slides up, you don't feel it anywhere except for where it's, you know, coming in through the rectal area and the anus. When you get the tube up really high like that, you're going to get closer to the cecum and the hepatic flexure, the furthest away, the right side of the colon, where there's a lot of activity that happens as far as producing things like lubricants for your gut and also probiotics for your gut. But it's also the place that allows for in your flow of whatever you're putting into your enema to get into the bloodstream, which is a really wonderful thing. We typically will choose to put things specifically in our enema that one might put into an IV. So Rich likes to do that while he's doing his enema. He'll put in B vitamins, he'll put in minerals, he'll use amino acids. I like to do it after my enema in a syringe, and after I've cleaned out my gut, I'll put it in with a syringe, and I tend to be able to hold that in for most of the day and keep my nutrients in the body that way. So do you have any questions about what I've said so far, or...
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. I never heard that. I'll have to contact you about the bag. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to let you know is what makes it easiest, I think, to support the movement, because some people are pretty impacted inside their colon, is that shortly after you get the part of the tube in that has the hole, that you would release the flow of coffee and allow the flow to support the movement of the tube past any blockages. And sometimes you're taking it a little bit out and putting it a little bit back in. But you would be surprised. You can typically get the tube in less than 30 seconds. And that way, I find it far easier to hold the enema because all the nerve endings that tell you it's time to release are found in the first 6 inches of the intestine. So, like, for instance, I have dear friends that are quadriplegics, and they needed someone to do bowel programs for them, stimulate the release of feces. And the way you do that is by actually doing a digital release inside the first 6 inches of the intestine there, you know, right by the anus and the rectum. You kind of tickle that area, and the person will have a bowel movement. What we're trying to do is have you hold it for 15 minutes. So if you're only putting your tube in 6 inches and you're putting something stimulating like coffee there, it makes it much harder to hold.
Yeah, I found that.
Okay?
Okay. So what volume do you, well, that changes everything because I've been putting it in, because all I can do is get it in 6 inches. And so I find I can't, I have a short, colon. I was told that by the doctor when I got a colonoscopy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm only able to put in a cup. My wife puts in 2 cups, but one cup is all I can stand. But if you're putting it up much deeper, well, then that changes the whole
thing. You just take one cup, man. That's it.
Right. And that's just fine, too. I do what I call fills. So for me, what I do, because I've been at this for so long and I'm using my long tube and I have so much to do, is I actually just squat in the bathtub. Most people can't do that. They would just lose it all. But I squat in the tub, put my tube up really high and release the coffee. And I typically only do a cup the first time. And I use that to get rid of the feces that's in my gut. And then I'll do another fill, which is typically 2 to 3 cups then. And then I can hold it because I'm not dealing with the feces. I'm not fighting for space with the feces. I can hold it without any problem. When I was younger, I used to be able to just put a quart in at one time and no problem. But you typically make 1 quart to 6 cups, depending upon you. For you, a quart would probably be plenty. And you might want to start out with just cleaning your colon with a cup. And then going ahead and doing your holds, typically 15 minutes. The classical training for how to do this is to start out by first curling up on your right side for 5 minutes, then laying on your back. And if you're able to put your feet up on a wall or to do a shoulder stand, that will help to get the coffee moving through the transverse part of the colon. And then the last part would be curling up on your left side, which would be the side that it ultimately releases. That's where your descending colon is. And then you would release it.
Wow,
I'm probably going to be doing a video to show all this stuff.
I think you should, yeah. And do it in color, you know, have background singers, too. I think you should. You know, Alan, one thing I used to do during my coffee enema days years ago was do a little shoulder stand, like up against the wall or something like that. You know, a shoulder stand in yoga.
Yeah.
So then it's just dropping straight down, and it was easier for me to hold it longer that way.
Yeah, that is the problem for me holding it. I'm getting better at it, though. My wife actually can lay on the bed, and she can insert it in the bed and not worry about it. And our bed, we use inclined bed therapy, so the bed is up about 8. Well, hers is up about 7 inches, I guess, something like that. So so when she's got it in there, she's actually a little bit more upright. So she'll be interested in hearing this when it comes on the podcast. Yeah, this is good information.
There's one more thing that'll help with this for you. There's one more thing that'll really help with this for you. Sorry for the interruption, but I wanted to make sure we had enough time. If you put some good quality salt, like Celtic sea salt or Himalayan sea salt, in your coffee enema, it will help you to hold it longer, and you'll have to figure out how much is the right amount for you. And I find that every enema is different, and some days I need more salt, other days I need less, but you figure out the amount and you can hold it. You will be able to hold it. And I always add some electrolytes in as well.
Oh, wow. Really interesting.
Yeah, Doc, you told us that long ago with the salt. What's that do? Kind of like the same principle, where if we don't have enough salt, we don't hold the water in anywhere in our body.
Yeah, all the cells there that line the colon are not used to seeing pure water. That's a foreign substance in the body. All water has dissolved salts in it. So when we put something in there that's more biologic, it feels friendlier and we can hold on to it longer. I would start with like a teaspoon of salt per quart and see how that works.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. It really makes a huge difference.
Wow.
And that'll help to keep you from getting electrolyte deficiencies as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now I have a question about ozone. How long do you retain the ozone? This makes me think, how far do you put the ozone thing up? The wazoo.
Yeah.
The ozone catheter.
Sure, yeah, how far up do you put the catheter? And I can't tell you that I know any science about that. I do it, and I put about 250 mLs in. And sometimes I move the catheter a little bit, a little further in. The catheters are about a foot long for the ozone that I use. And so sometimes just a few inches, sometimes maybe almost a foot. Here's my thought about it. I like, in a way, leaving it in one spot when I'm doing it, because I don't want to kill too many bugs, honestly. Now that I'm starting to appreciate the microbiome, I have kind of a reverence for these organisms that I did not have before.
Sure.
And so I'm just wanting the ozone to stay in one small area and not interfere with too many of the bugs and let the ozone do its thing through one small spot.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wondered about the bacteria, actually. I was kind of wondering whether it was a good thing or not.
Yeah, see, you have a kind heart, too, Alan.
What's that?
Be kind to all living things, just be kind.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind to living things. Yeah.
I kind of think about it as that we're putting in, a high-quality oxygen and creating an oxygen-rich environment to support the microorganisms that require oxygen rather than the anaerobic ones. What do you think about that?
I just don't know. So, it can't be looked at as a natural process. I mean, there's nothing in nature. There's no trees that have little catheters growing on them that make ozone come up that animals walk up to and do that. It's what we're doing because we're in a bind right now. We're in the middle of a toxic industrialized civilization, and our mitochondria are poisoned, and ozone helps rejuvenate that. And otherwise, we wouldn't even have any inclination to be even thinking about doing things like this. So there's going to be side effects to it. So I only do it when I think it's got some benefit to it. And as soon as I don't sense that, I won't do it for months at a time.
Yeah, I haven't actually done that after about 6 months right now. For some reason, I just haven't. So I go through phases with it as well. I think for me, the big part was, you know, the gut-brain connection. And I did a lot when I was having a lot of issues with my brain. And now that I'm getting my brain back, I haven't done a lot with the ozone.
We found a brain on Amazon and we ordered it.
And they did the Prime, so it was only 2 days.
One of my fun things I've been using is actually, it's an infranasal laser, which helps to feed the mitochondria in the brain and support what they call autophagy or autophagy, where we start releasing the old, funky, exhausted mitochondria and replace them with healthy new mitochondria. And this is particularly beneficial for the brain mitochondria. So there's a gut-brain connection that's quite profound. And they're even talking now about it's not just the gut that talks to the brain, but the brain talks to the gut as well. So there's some really profound connections in supporting brain function as well as gut function, or support in both sides.
Yeah, interesting. I've been using one of those too. I kind of enjoy it. You know, it feels quite warm when it's going on. I figured it's kind of some sort of a heating effect when you.
Mine is quite low heat. I don't notice a lot of warmth from my infranasal device, but I really like it. Available for people. I ordered a bunch from China, so I have them at a decent price.
Okay, Alan, good job. Good questions. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Fun having you on the show.
Of course, I always love your show, and I particularly enjoy when the three of you get together, you know, because you're so serious.
We are so serious. We just got to loosen up a little bit. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's something I can't understand.
Thanks, Alan.
Anyways, thank you very much.
See you soon. Bye.
Yeah, take care. Bye.
I really appreciate what you said about them, you know, the enemas, how you did it, because we have a motto around here that you spoke to us like we were a golden retriever. And
maybe you could tell me what you think is going on.
That's right.
And please speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
That's right.
It wasn't brains that got me here. I can assure you of that.
Well, you see, that's the problem. You know, it just wasn't brains that got us here. So thanks, Marnie, for that. Hey, have you guys ever heard of, I'm pulling up the bottle because you can see it, Spikenard?
Oh, yes.
So Living Libations, one of our favorite places in the world. They're up in Canada near Allen. They got some of the sweetest little essential oils and all kinds of things. And she's been on her show, Nadine. So she did a little video thing on Spikenard. So I went on the website and I start reading about it. And this Spikenard, said to be abused by Mary Magdalene to anoint the feet of Christ in the New Testament. Wow. And it was the same ointment that caused Judas to balk at Mary's extravagance. Wow. In short, this essential oil is the creme de la creme, widely known for its ability to revitalize the skin. Spikenard essential oil, beneficial for aging skin, dry skin. And it comes from Nadine gets it from Nepal. It's a wild, it's a wild thing. Antibacterial, antifungal, anti-inflammatory, used by the ancient Egyptians as an aromatic and by the wealthy Roman women in perfumes. Yoo-hoo, nerve liver tonic. Check this out. This is really cool. They used it back in Egypt, Rome, what today is the Middle East. For its medicinal healing properties, it was quite sought after, wildcrafted like this one. In biblical times, a single pint of spikenard oil cost an entire year's salary for the average worker.
Yes.
Wow. So I said, man, I want some of this stuff. And it's supposed to help sleep and stuff. So I bought a bottle and I put some on the soles of my feet, and you can really feel it. Like you just put two or three drops on the soles of your feet, you know. And I put some on this morning. Do I sound smarter this morning?
You do, Patrick.
I hope so. Isn't it fun to find these little? I mean, think about this stuff. A couple thousand years, people were using these little oils. You know, it's like, whoa. Yeah.
So I'm curious, can you apply it straight onto a wound, or do you have to cut it with other oils?
I'm not sure about that. It doesn't say anything about wounds. No, I don't know. I don't know. But it's like an effective sedative, calm agitation. They use it for indigestion, heart palpitations, insomnia. It's really got a lot of wonderful uses. How God created these wonderful plants. You know,
and it comes with a beautiful woman with long hair to massage it into your body.
That's what I was dreaming last night. Yeah,
she used her hair to massage it into Jesus's feet.
Oh, that's right, she did. Yeah, the Mary Magdalene thing. Yeah,
probably got a great treatment too.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Okay,